The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Microsun Lamps.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. My name is Vic McCunis. And I began talking to authors on WYSO back in 1994. And 25 years later, I'd like to welcome to the program someone who I've been expecting for a good portion of that time to write a book. And she has. Her name is Rachel Eve Moulton. And she's just published her first novel. It's called Tinfoil Butterfly. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And I'm serious. I have been waiting for you to write this book.
Thank you. I was working on it. It took a little while to get to this moment.
Well, I don't know when it was, but it was a long time ago where I understood that this would eventually happen. Now, how did I get this idea about you?
I grew up in this town, so you've known me a long time, and I was always writing from a very young age. I think I announced at the Antioch School in fourth grade that I was going to be a teacher and a writer, and that's what I set about doing. So I went to Antioch College, and I actually played with this at when I was in college, and then did a draft at Emerson, where I got my MFA, and then let it rest. It almost found a home early on, but it wasn't ready. And I went back to it. I had a very busy life. I was working in private schools as an administrator, and I went back to it because I didn't have enough time to work on anything fresh and was able to then really look at it objectively and do a lot of damage. And the result has been good.
I'm taking it that the story has morphed quite a bit over the years.
Yes, it is a lot more compact, and I think I came to terms with really letting it be as plot-driven as it wanted to be, and that I didn't have to let go of character and imagery and the language I love in order to keep it moving very quickly.
And the result is a novel called Tinfoil Butterfly. And I'm going to have to be very careful talking about this story. What can I say about it? What can you say about it?
Well, for me, it did, like I said, it started in a college class here. It was a playwriting class, and we were given three photographs that were taken from a magazine. And it was three characters. There aren't that many, but the three main characters, I would say, Emma, Earl, and George. And from those images, we were told we were supposed to have these three people meet and matter to each other. So it was very quickly, probably poorly written, scene between these three people. And that got put away for a while. But when I came back to it, that's what I tried to develop. So the two actually main characters, Emma and Earl, meet in the Black Hills of South Dakota. Emma is running away from her life and some horrible things that have happened to her and that she's done. And she meets Earl, and he is in similarly grim circumstances. And it's about how they kind of fall in love and save each other. Although Earl is a little boy, so it's not a romance. It's about how they can care for each other.
Thanks for clarifying that, because I'm sure a lot of listeners immediately clicked on that. They fall in love.
That would be gross. No.
Love is a real challenge for Emma, isn't it?
Yes. Emma has been through her share of chasing the wrong kind, not able to love herself at all, in fact, hating herself quite a bit, and watching her own parents go through similar kind of self-hatred and destruction.
She's got a fairly dysfunctional background, doesn't she?
She does.
And she's, what, 18 when this is happening?
Correct.
Okay. What is it about the area that you set this in? There had to be some reason why you chose this region. Is there something haunting about it for you?
Yeah. I mean, I went, again, the origins of this go way back, and I was on a trip with a good friend. Probably it was a co-op through Antioch. Somehow I was getting college credit for this, which is glorious, and writing and driving around the country. And we at one point ended up in the Badlands, which was the particular place that I found fascinating. And we spent some time there and then in the Black Hills, and I just became kind of obsessed with that area of the country. Very haunted, kind of, especially the Badlands, barren and haunted and seems scarred in some way. And that seemed to parallel Emma and Earl.
I've been through there and I feel a lot of ghosts in there. And maybe it's because of the fact that this was a sacred region for the early inhabitants.
Yes. And I think that's very clear. And as a white person going through there, kind of trying to think about that and then think about your own impact. I mean, there we were, fairly privileged young women traveling through in our with our tent and our Honda and having a little adventure. And there was very clear in that landscape that the history there and the importance of it was something that us being there briefly, we weren't going to understand. So it stayed with me, and I did a lot of research about that area afterwards because of those curiosities and that feeling that came out of the place. I'm also very fascinated by a sense of place, and often what I write starts with that, the feeling of a location and what it might mean and what it might carry that we are no longer talking about. So I'm very interested in those kinds of things, and the Badlands were big.
In case you're just tuning in, my guest today in studio is Rachel Eve Moulton, and she has recently published her debut novel. It's called Tin Foil Butterfly. And Rachel, when I started reading the book, I got a few pages in, and I just went, "Whoa, what, Rachel? What are you doing?" And then I realized what I was reading, and how would we? I hate to categorize books, but is being categorized by other people as horror.
Yes.
Are you okay with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, my journey with that has been – it's been a long journey with that. I did not think of it as horror. I think part of early attempts was it wasn't ready, but it also wasn't identifying itself in any way in that form. I'm somebody who grew up loving to read horror and alternating between classics and – Stephen King and all kinds of, you know, things that definitely fit into that genre of horror. But I never wanted to write it myself, I think because of the reality that people don't take it as seriously and that it isn't – even if I think it's art, it might not be. So I was still avoiding that. And when I found – not even my agent, but when we found Daphne with MCD FSG, she called it feminist horror. And maybe she was just trying to sell me on the idea of horror. And she knew if she said feminist, I'd like it. I don't know. But that's kind of where it started to fall into that horror genre. And I started to think, okay, why haven't I said that's what it is? And what are my hangups about that? And that was good to look into in terms of my own thinking. And I really like that's what it is at this point. I think it's a lot of fun. And I also think horror is changing. I love, in particular, horror movies and how much there is available now in terms of what horror movies are trying to do, who's telling them, what they're using to scare us, what the character, particularly in terms of gender roles.
There's a lot of violence in your story.
I think so.
And one of the most violent people in your story is your protagonist.
Yes.
Yeah, sweet Emma. She's right from the beginning, she's ready to do it.
Yes.
She's got a lot of anger, doesn't she?
She's angry.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's angry. I think... She's always been angry, and there's also a part of being female that correlates with anger or isn't supposed to. So I was very interested in someone who was struggling with her gender, having a hard time understanding what it meant for her to be female, to be sexually attractive, to hate herself, to be all these things, and is there a point at which she could just be enraged? And I think there are parts of me that sometimes have wished I can just be full of rage about what it means to be female in the world. And so it was fun to kind of write her as just so angry and so done that she was willing to further the damage she'd already put into the world. And then to be able to save her a little bit from that as well.
Late in the book, she makes a statement about God that I thought was very telling.
I don't know if I remember.
I think you do remember it. We can't talk about it on the radio because you use a bad word.
I use a lot of bad words. I was reminding myself that I should not curse when I got here.
That's good. We'll just bleep you if you do.
Okay.
We had a guest on last week who said bad words, and he was on the phone in San Francisco. And after the interview, I said, you know, we're going to have to bleep you. And he says, but I was quoting somebody.
That's not how it works.
Apparently, he thought if you're quoting somebody, it's okay. And they have loosened things up. You've probably noticed in the New York Times and even on National Public Radio that occasionally there's a bad word, but they usually give you some kind of warning.
Yes.
Not the New York Times so much anymore, which it's not my grandmother's New York Times anymore.
No, probably not.
Speaking of the New York Times, I don't know if you noticed on Twitter the other day that the woman who writes the horror column for the New York Times in their books section, she had a stack of books. She had a photo of a stack of books that she was looking at to consider, and one of the books was your book. And I sent her a tweet right away, and I said, you've got to review that, Danielle.
Thank you.
So we'll keep our fingers crossed.
I know. It might happen.
It might.
It would be cool.
I think this is right up her alley. I really do.
Yeah. I looked into her after that because I saw the conversation. So I was pleased.
Thank you. I hope that happens. I noticed you didn't chime in. You probably were just going,
So I have been working in private schools, and I was a teacher, an English teacher for years, and a school administrator, and deliberately got off of everything. So I am now trying to re-engage with things like Twitter.
Well, I was surprised to see you on there. I didn't realize. Is that a recent thing?
I think it was on there a while ago, and I just didn't touch it for a long time.
So it was inactive.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of those on there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, but now I'm going to make a little bit of an effort.
Cool. Well, I'll be watching. Twitter, that is. My guest is Rachel Eve Moulton, and her debut novel is Tin Foil Butterfly. You're listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'll continue my conversation with Rachel right after this. It's The Book Nook. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, your home for independent news and handpicked music. I'm Vic McCunis, and I have handpicked my guest today. Her name is Rachel Eve Moulton, and her debut novel is Tin Foil Butterfly. Rachel, I was very touched when I saw who you dedicated the book to.
Yeah.
He's been on this program.
Has he?
The late Don Wallace. Tell us about him.
So I think I mentioned I grew up in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and I have known the Wallace family from a very young age. I think I met them when I was 2 on a playground, maybe at John Bryan, somewhere in there. And I'm closest with the youngest sister, Jessica, who actually took that road trip with me to the Badlands. And her father played a really big role in my life, as did Jessica and her sisters. But he was a journalist. He ran the Yellow Springs News. And I grew up in his house as much as I did my own. He was very encouraging from a very young age about my writing and about my opinions in general. So before I was even writing stories, he was very good at sitting down with us for a meal and listening very closely to what we had to say, sometimes challenging it, but always doing it in a way that felt very validating. What we had to say at age whatever, 6, was somehow relevant and interesting to him as a professional adult, as a dad figure, but also as that professional. So he played a huge role in my upbringing and being a writer. I found recently stuff that he had edited for me probably in high school, maybe middle school. And he wrote, like, it's got his yellow typewriter paper because he always used a typewriter. And it's just like 3 pages of information about what he thought of my story. And to look back at that now, I cherished it, but I also took it for granted that someone would write you 3 pages of information at 15 about the story you wrote. It's very, very touching, very thorough. He also, at age 17, published my story for me, and I had a little signing at the Epic Bookstore, and that was because of his encouragement and his investment, honestly.
Speaking of signings, as we are airing this on Saturday morning, you have an event tomorrow, right here in Yellow Springs at 3:00. And you mentioned a local bookstore. Well, this is being sponsored by a local bookstore. Do you want to tell our listeners what's happening?
Sam and Eddie's has been kind enough to sponsor the event along with the Emporium. So we're going to be there from 3 to 5. And I've been in contact with Sam from a distance. And she's been putting it all together for me with the help of some other people here. So it means a lot to me. It's my first actual reading, and I really wanted it to be here in Yellow Springs.
And you just mentioned two places across the street from each other. We need to clarify that you're going to be in the one with the larger space, which is the Underdog Cafe / Emporium Wines, and that's it.
Correct.
233 Xenia Avenue, and it's at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. That's tomorrow. And we're playing this on Saturday morning.
Got it.
So people can come and they can hear about the story and they can meet you. And are you going to have any books?
I will have books there.
Oh, neat.
To sign.
So it's the real deal.
It's an event. It's an event. And I, like I said, I'm really excited about doing it here and having the support of everybody who helped in one way or another raise me and get me to this moment.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
What's it been like having the book out? It's only been out for, what, a couple weeks?
Yeah, it came out on September 10th. Part of the whole, it's been about a year since we were really working on it, and I knew when the release date would be. And there's been a number of things that have happened along the way, and because it's a new experience for me, I haven't really necessarily expected the good things that have come or known what they were going to be. So building up to the September 10th date has been great. It's been a lot of fun. It's been well received. I've had enough people read Galleys to know that some people were going to like it at least. And then to get to the release date was a little less scary on that day than I thought it might be because it had already been viewed by people. It has been a good experience or an interesting experience to have people that I know now read it and get their reactions to it. And that's been fun.
Well, I seem to recall running into you and you were in the Emporium, and this has been at least a year ago.
Yeah.
And I asked you what you're up to, and you said that you had this book coming out. And then you mentioned the publisher, and I just said, wow, you got Farrar, Straus & Giroux to sign you to a book deal? How did this happen?
I had was working in a private school who was very supportive of me as a private school leader and also as a writer, which is very fortunate. And they were able to support me to go to a couple conferences. So I had been working on it on and off. And met on campus Dawn Tripp, another fabulous writer who wrote a book called Georgia most recently. And she was also very encouraging. So I had a couple things fall into place where I went and got to meet some writers. I worked with Pam Houston has a group of workshops called Writing by Writers.
Pam Houston, the writer?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I got to work with her.
She's also on Farrar, Straus & Giroux.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. She's great.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christian Kiefer, who I worked with more directly in the second time I was with Pam's group. So those things happened, and I got a lot of encouragement at that last workshop I went to, and Dawn Tripp said, my agent might be interested. And so it was a combination of it being ready and knowing some good people and having the confidence, and I sent it. And everything that had been really challenging as a writer in terms of publication up until that moment became very easy. I got the agent right away. And Kimberly Witherspoon at Inkwell, and found Daphne Durham, my editor, pretty quickly after that. So it feels a little bit like there was, 20 years of it feeling impossible to get to a moment where it happened very quickly and smoothly and with a lot of support.
When you say it all went smoothly after that point, are you including the editing process in that?
Yes.
Cool.
So when I talked to Daphne, there was this whole kind of, for those of you who don't know, interview process where you talk to people who are interested, phone calls. And she clicked with me right away. She's on the West Coast, I believe, in Seattle, but works for FSG out of New York. So she had ideas. She told me what she thought of it. She told me what she might want me to change, and it was all spot on. And so I knew right away, as soon as I talked to her, that this was somebody I could work with. She made sense to me. She understood the book. She wasn't going to ask me to do things that didn't make sense. She saw it as horror, but she also wasn't going to ask me to, do ridiculous things, change it into Freddy Krueger or something, which, maybe I would have fun with that too. But she knew what it was.
Give me an example of something that she asked you to change.
The ending is much shorter than it was. I wrote on for a little bit, not to any event, but that went on a little bit. She was very good at, I tend to overwrite. She was very good at still getting it down to mm-hmm. something a little neater. There's one moment that I can't say too much about towards the end where she really thought, okay, this is a moment that you could have some more fun with in terms of magical realism or horror or whatever you're thinking of this as. So at this moment, Emma can have another experience that is a little more, I don't know, gruesome isn't the word, but possibly not connected to reality. So she kind of leaned on me a little bit to feel comfortable with the idea of horror and let my continued line of thinking continue, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense to me.
Okay.
My guest is Rachel Eve Moulton. We're talking about her novel, Tinfoil Butterfly. And as I was reading it, I was trying to pick up on maybe some of your influences or maybe when you were making some sort of homage. And I think I picked up on an homage to Don Wallace, and I think that was your mention of Switzerland County, Indiana.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. I picked up on that one.
Yep, that's there.
Okay. And then because he used to have a newspaper there.
He did. Right. And we would go all the time. I would go to visit. His parents lived there. We called them Meemaw and Peepaw, and we'd go down and see them. They were in Madison, actually, but he had a place in Vivi. And my daughter, Violet, I often call her Vivi because of that time. But we went down there a lot.
And I also picked up on, years ago, I had the late Janet Leigh on the program, who had a very brief appearance at the beginning of Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho before it all ended in the shower.
Yes.
And I picked up what I thought was an homage to Hitchcock in your book, which I'm not going to talk about, but it's in the basement, and also the birds.
Yes, yes.
Are you a Hitchcock person?
I love Hitchcock, yeah. Okay. Right. I mean, I love movies, and I read as much as I watch movies, but I love all of that stuff and grew up on it and watched all those Hitchcock movies fairly young. Mm-hmm. So that's all in there, some of it on purpose and maybe some of it not.
I think that's the best time to watch Hitchcock because that's when you can really feel it when you're young.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What are some of your other influences? You talked about how you enjoy reading horror and you mentioned Stephen King. What are some other books or authors that you admire?
Gosh, this question is always hard for me just because I read so much and I try to read a lot of different things.
That's fine. It doesn't have to be horror.
I adore Zadie Smith, and she's about to have another book come out. I really like her. I don't necessarily write like her, but I love her stuff. I love contemporary female writers, and I seek those out a lot. I don't know how to say her last name. She wrote The Grip of It. I've recently discovered her, Jacques. It's J-E-M-C, Jemke.
I've seen the name, and I don't know how to pronounce it either.
She has a short story collection coming out. She's somebody I've more recently discovered. She was kind enough to
gave
read.
You a blurb. Okay,
yep.
Right. Uh-huh,
yep.
Yeah. She wrote, "I have read no book like this, a dark adventure story that leads to an epic reckoning, all told in the most taut and vivid prose."
I liked her more after that. I did read her before.
I bet you did.
But then I was like, this is my new best friend.
Uh-huh.
So I read a lot of fiction. What am I reading right now? I am lucky enough to be on the long list for the Center for Fiction Debut Novel Prize. And so I've been reading those books to see what they're like, which has been fun just to have a to-do list. The Bobcat, and I'm going to forget her name right now, but it was fantastic. I just finished that.
In other words, you're evaluating your competition?
I guess. That seems like the crass way to say it. I am not expecting to win, and that is fine with me. But it is awfully nice to be at this point among such a talented group and to read them and think, oh, my goodness, like somebody thought that I was the same level as these folks.
I must confess I'm not aware of this particular honor or prize. What is it?
That's all I know.
Do they have a banquet or a dinner and award
ceremony?
There is
a banquet. There's a short list that could be coming out as we're talking. Who knows? Then they pick one. Tommy Orange won last year, which means a lot to me.
That's
his book,
big.
There is fantastic. So it's nice.
If you do become one of the final group, are you going to show up at the event and not have a speech prepared because you don't expect to win?
Well, because I'm just so special. I don't need to prepare.
Okay. I hear these stories all the time about people being in the audience and sitting there waiting for someone else to be announced, and then suddenly they're thrust up on stage and they have to scramble.
Yeah, that seems worse than having it prepared, doesn't it?
I don't know. I kind of like that. I think that's kind of a sweet thing when people don't expect to win.
I guess. They asked me to write. I ended up with an acknowledgement page that I like. But when my editor asked me to write it, I was like, I don't want to do that. That's a trap. I'm going to leave somebody off that you're trying to trick me into, you know, getting somebody really angry with me. But
you mean the thing at the end of the book?
Yes.
Well, that's a laundry list. You've got all kinds of people on there.
I know, but that's what I thought when she said. And she's like, no, you really have to do it. It's important to your readers. People like to see something about you. But I didn't want to do it. Like, you wouldn't want to do an acceptance speech because you're going to forget to thank your spouse or something.
It is so thrilling to be on one of those acknowledgement lists.
Is it?
It really is.
I have been on them. So.
And here's another thing. Every person that you named on there is going to go out and buy your book.
Well, that's good.
So if you name 100 people, you're going to give yourself a little bump on the list.
Then you've got some sales.
There you go.
That's good.
You know, that's just smart.
Well, I wrote something that was genuine. I have trouble when I'm asked to be disingenuous. And so my first reaction was like, I can't do this. It's a trap. And then when I actually sat down to do it, I was like, oh, I actually really care about the journey of this book. And these people really did help. So it was easy then.
I liked it. I thought it was very good.
Thank you.
And I read a lot of them. And I usually have a judgment about the writer based on the kind of acknowledgments that they have.
Great.
Because some of them, frankly, aren't that impressive.
Wow.
They're not being very generous to people.
Yes.
Or maybe they're just burned out.
They might be tired or scared.
Maybe so. James Patterson, scared. I don't even know if he must have a ghostwriter for his acknowledgments by now.
Well, at this point, yes.
I would think so. My guest is Rachel Eve Moulton, and we're talking about her debut novel. It's Tinfoil Butterfly, and you can meet her tomorrow. She has a big event. It's happening right here in Yellow Springs, Ohio, on the main drag, 233 Xenia Avenue at the Underdog Cafe. That's the Emporium Wine Shop. 3:00 Sunday afternoon, Rachel will be there, and they're expecting a lot of people, so you might want to show up early. You might want to get a table, get yourself a cup of coffee just so that you're there, because this is going to be a mob scene, isn't it, Rachel?
I hope so. That would be fun.
Well, don't you know everybody in town?
I do know a lot of people in town.
And they're all going to come, aren't they?
They might.
Plus, we have all the people listening out there on the radio who are saying, you know, this sounds intriguing.
That's right.
And a Sunday in Yellow Springs is a pretty cool thing.
It's delightful.
Thing. And I can come, and I can check out this book and this book signing and this author and this mob of people. And it'll be so fun.
That's right.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm excited about it. I was excited when I got the book. When I opened the package, sometimes you get excited when you open a package.
Yeah.
And this was one. I looked at it and I said, I love this cover. And do you want to talk about the cover at all?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Because it's kind of a spoiler, isn't it, to talk about the cover?
Well, I don't know. She, you know, it's Earl's eye on there. So it's one of the characters, or that's how I see it anyway.
Uh-huh.
And he has built, he's very lonely and is trying to survive and has, you know, at some point built a little mask for himself out of tinfoil. So I'll say that. And the cover kind of reflects that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was a really wonderful experience. I think I got two covers. I had heard stories about publishers wanting to change titles and not liking covers, and you don't have necessarily a lot of say. And just all the way through, it felt really like they knew the book. And so this was one of two. The other one would have been fine, but this was definitely the best of the two, and we went with it right away.
One of two covers or one or two titles?
Two covers. The title was always the title and was never in question, which was awesome.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way the story builds, and we keep getting clues. We're trying to figure out relationships. Emma, who's this guy that she loved? What's up with her parents? How messed up is that family? George, what's up with this family? Who are these people? Who's who?
Right.
And you just occasionally will throw us a little dribble, a little clue. You'll drop a name. You'll tell us about some incident that happened that helps us to understand how messed up Emma is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of issues happening here. Plus, you also go into these dream states.
Yes.
Where we don't know for a little while whether this is real.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun as a reader.
Thank you.
Yeah. I like that. And was it hard to write the ending? Did you know the ending a long time ago when you were working on this, or is the ending a more recent thing?
The ending is more recent. There were a couple things that happened in in the final drafts, there's a character at the beginning who was just gone. And then that character now plays a role a little later on. There was a different fate for one of the characters, other characters at the end of the book. So there were a couple of things like that that happened. I had written a final, the epilogue had was written in a certain way, and I think it's existed in terms of language and seen in the same way since then, but some of the actions leading up to it changed, so that altered it a little bit.
The book is Tin Foil Butterfly. My guest in studio today is Rachel Eve Moulton. It's the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and we'll continue with my conversation with Rachel right after this. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I've been joined in studio today by Rachel Eve Moulton, and we're discussing her debut novel. It's called Tin Foil Butterfly. Rachel, as I was reading this, I kept seeing the film version of it. I kept seeing all this wild action and excitement, and I kept seeing the film version. Do you ever see the film version?
Yes. I think that's something that is greatly appealing, and I've heard that before, that the images would lend themselves nicely to film. And I, you know, back to Yellow Springs, I worked in the Little Art Theater for years and love movies. So that's a very appealing idea. I have not thought of – I had a friend was teasing me and asking me if I knew who would play the characters, and I don't go there. But it would be awfully fun to see it on a screen.
Well, the book has only been out for a little while, and it's bound to get into the hands of some of these people.
I know. I had early on somebody kind of find me, I won't say who, but an LA producer through Facebook, and we ended up on the phone for about an hour talking about it. And, you know, nothing has come of that yet, but it felt like a good sign.
So you already have them sniffing around, huh?
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
When you hung up the phone after that conversation, what'd you do? Did you start screaming?
No, I was very excited, though, and believed myself to be home alone, but the husband had come home and was sitting right outside my office and had, like, listened to the whole thing.
Oh, really?
Which later was awesome because I could be like, you know, how did I sound and what was it, you know, like, and it was a Skype call, so he could hear the other guy, too.
Oh.
So that was really helpful after I screamed and explained to him it wasn't funny to terrify a woman in her home. So, yeah.
And you live in New Mexico, is that right?
We do. We live outside of Albuquerque, about an hour from Santa Fe. We live in the mountains, the East Mountains. We moved there about a year ago. My husband got a job offer out there right at the time I got the book offer. And so I walked away from a wonderful community in Providence, Rhode Island, and a decent salary, and decided to go, you know, try to make this other thing work. Mm-hmm. So we have a beautiful home up in the mountains and a great community there, too.
And you were probably wishing you were there the other day so you could go to Rio Rancho. I'm teasing you. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Okay. The book is Tinfoil Butterfly. Rachel Eve Moulton wrote it. Is there another book in the hopper there? It's taken you 20 years to write this one. Is it going to take you another 20, or is there another one out there a little closer, a little sooner?
There's another one out there. I'm working with Daphne on it, so second book. She and I have not discussed it again since the initial conversation when I talked to her about this one and the one I'm working on now. And I have 10 chapters that aren't embarrassing, so hopefully within the next year, I'll have something worth my editor reading at least.
Something totally different, right?
I hope so, yeah.
Is it something you can talk about at all, or is it going to be completely jettisoned and gone and turned into something completely different the next time I talk to you?
I don't think so. It's been in the works not this long, but it's been around. It's the thing that I was kind of playing with when I didn't have enough energy to really – creative energy to work on something fresh and went back to look at Tinfoil again. So this one is about – it's set on an island in Lake Erie that I've been to a few times. I call it Fowler Island, but it's Kelly's Island.
Uh-huh, sure.
and has also struck me as kind of a haunted place in terms of the quarry in the center and a few other things. So it's about two sisters who are growing up on that island together, and it's centered around the crisis of finding out that their parents are going to divorce and one of them has to live off island and one is to stay on. But I'm also very obviously interested in haunted houses, and so I'm playing with all of that right now. Kelly's Island is very small and seems a little stuck in a particular time and place. I used to go to a writer's retreat there all the time with some wonderful Susan Streeter Carpenter from Yellow Springs, the Grimm sisters, Mary and Susan Grimm, and Mary Norris, who's very successful right now, the grammar queen. And Patricia Springstubb, a bunch of people who have recently done very well in terms of their writing. But we would go there annually. I think they were just there. I couldn't make it, but they were just there. And we'd stay at Kelly's Island, and it's kind of a fascinating place.
If it's the island I'm thinking of, we have a longtime Book Nook listener and supporter who I think has a place up there. And if you're listening right now, hey, I'm talking about you. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYS. So speaking of workshops and writers, I noticed that Sharon Short, former director of the Antioch Writers Workshop, gave you a very nice write-up in the Cox, Ohio newspapers last weekend. You were a participant in the workshop over the years?
Yeah. I think very early on, there was some first or second year they had Joyce Carol Oates. So that's my first memory is meeting Joyce Carol Oates at the Writers Workshop and being, I think I had a fellowship or something at the time. And then I was briefly on the board, but I did a lot there and worked with Suzanne Clouser and was very supportive. And again, Susan Streeter Carpenter, people like that. But yeah, I was very involved for a while there.
Suzanne has also been on this program, the late Suzanne Clouser, and she really was the queen of literature in Yellow Springs. What an amazing woman. She did a lot of television work. She wrote screenplays for programs like Bonanza.
Yes.
Yeah, she was amazing. She knew Rod Serling.
I know.
She was good friends with Rod Serling.
She was fierce, too. She was just like, if you had her in your corner, you felt very, very proud because she had strong opinions and she would tell you what they were. I loved it.
I agree. She's the only guest I've ever had on the program who accused me of not reading her book.
That sounds about right.
Which was not true. I actually read her book. But she, over the years, she'd always say, I just can't believe you didn't interview with me and you didn't read my book. I'd see her on the street or I'd see her in the liquor store. I can't believe you didn't read my book. I did read your book.
Yeah, she would. That sounds like her.
I always read the book.
I believe you.
Yeah. And I read your book.
Thank you.
Tinfoil Butterfly. And I've got to say, Rachel, I was shocked, shocked, shocked.
Why?
I always thought you were just kind of
a nice person.
Yeah.
Those are the worst kind of people.
I read it. I said, my God, I don't know her at all.
That's right. I grew up. I had a nice childhood. This is what happens.
What do your parents think of the book? Have they read it?
They have. My father definitely read it very quickly. He's a big reader and he reads lots of things. My mom is an artist in the area and her art is very kind and colorful and sweet and playful. Mm-hmm. So I would say I'm hitting the exact opposite, and I was very much not expecting her to read it because why? Like, why do that to yourself?
Because it's your book. Of
course
she's
going to
read it.
Yes, but she supports me in many ways. Like, this was not necessary. But she did read it. I think she skimmed a few parts, but she read it and had already read it by the time I got here. So they're very supportive. Part of growing up in Yellow Springs has meant that I got to feel like that artistic part of me was valid all along, and I don't think that happens for everybody. I think there's a lot of people who struggle with, is this a good use of my time? Am I worth it? Is this important? And I was raised to believe it was self-expression or reflecting back what you see in the world is one of the most important things you can do.
I've always been amazed by the number of authors that write books where they'll have, like, say the father in the fictional family is a psychopath and their father is living. And I always think, wow, you know, this – it'd be so easy for friends of the family to say, whoa, we didn't really – because you know how people just – they treat fiction like it was real?
Like it happened.
Especially if it's really well written.
Yes.
They go, oh, well, I didn't know Rachel grew up in a family like
that. No, I was very, I don't generally use the word blessed, but I guess, but with these two families, I had the Wallace family and I had my own. And from that, you know, I just kind of have a big imagination mm-hmm. and have always been drawn to darker stories.
So what's it like then? Do you go on sites like Amazon and look at your sales? I mean, what do you do?
I became someone briefly. Like when you start to get little pieces of good news, then you kind of have a little bit of an addiction to that, uh-huh, right? You're like, right. Well, maybe something happened today.
Right.
I should check Twitter. So there's a little bit more of that going on than I thought. I thought I would be cool about it and not worried. But when you have a lot of free time and you're supposed to – during the day and you're supposed to be writing a second book, there's a lot of, you know, social media you can check, and there's also a lot of toast that needs to be made and consumed, things like this, lying on the floor. It's very professional. but I do think I've looked at that a little bit, And it's been good. I got one bad review and let myself feel a little bad about it for a while, and then – then it was fine. It kind of felt like a rite of passage anyway. It was Kirkus. They
They're a trade publication.
Yeah, they hate a lot of people.
The reviewer didn't like it?
No, I think he or she needed a beverage or a hug or something. They did not. It was sad.
Yeah. But you got over it, it sounds like, very quickly.
Uh-huh. I gave myself a day, and then I decided it didn't matter.
And these people are so often completely wrong, because it's random at a place like Kirkus.
Yes.
They have all these freelancers writing these boom, 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 quick reviews, and if you get the wrong one and they don't like the book, well.
There it is.
Yeah.
So it's all good.
There it is forever.
Yes.
Right?
it's a gift.
And then later on they're going,
Whoops.
Gee, we blew that one, didn't we? Well, I love the inside looks into the industry and just everything about it. And this particular imprint, FSG Originals, they put out some really cool edgy kind of stuff. They have a writer you are probably familiar with named Frank Bill mm-hmm. from Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I've had him on the show, and his stuff, it makes the violence in your book look like Sesame Street.
Good.
You know, his stuff is so violent. In fact, his last book, I could not finish it.
Well, I like that.
I was reading the last book. And I read it and I'm like, ugh, this
too
is
much.
So gruesome. But he's gotten a movie. He had a movie.
Awesome.
His novel, Donnybrook, was made into a mm-hmm. film. And I'm like, mm-hmm. whoa. And as far as I know, he still works driving a forklift at some place in Kentucky. He lives over there kind of where Don Wallace used to live. He lives in one of those little river towns.
That's awesome.
And he crosses over and he still has his day job.
Nice.
And do you still have a day job, or is being a mom your day job?
I'm a mom and, you know, kind of gave myself a year. I worked very hard for a very long time. I was the head of a high school, which there's plenty of wonderful and horrific stories there. I'll try to be discreet when I tell them.
I remember that. Was that locally?
I had a wonderful support at Miami Valley School and uh-huh. was an English teacher there for a long time and loved it, particularly loved the students. And then became an administrator there, and from there ended up in Moses Brown in Providence, Rhode Island, and just incredible group of people, particularly faculty and staff and administration there and students. So, you know, it was this huge job, and I'm a very empathetic person, and it was very challenging. It was hard. I felt if I didn't take everybody's situation very sincerely and personally, why would I even bother doing the job? And then what was left of me was pretty shattered to care about all of this so deeply. And then, you know, my spouse, Dan, didn't enjoy the East Coast. And when he's always wanted to be in New Mexico. And so when we got that opportunity, the two things lined up and I just took the leap and decided I would give myself a year or two without pursuing more regularly paid work
mm-hmm.
and just write. So that's where I am right now.
Well, being a principal, I think, would be an incredibly difficult, stressful job.
It was. It was very stressful, and it changed my relationship. I'm going back there soon. I have a reading in Providence through a group called Cardigan Connection, and I'm so excited to be there. But it definitely took everything. you know, and changed my relationship with my own family and my tolerance for my own children and things like that. So it's awfully nice to be fully present and only as irritated as motherhood ever makes you, right, rather than more extreme.
Mm-hmm. The book is Tinfoil Butterfly. Rachel Eve Moulton wrote it. You can meet her tomorrow. She has a big event happening right here in Yellow Springs, and that's at the Underdog Cafe, which is part of Emporium Wines on 233 Xenia Avenue. Sam and Eddie's presenting and giving it a bigger space in the Emporium because the bookstore probably doesn't have enough room for all the people that are going to show up to see Rachel tomorrow at 3 o'clock, 233 Xenia Avenue in Yellow Springs. And I got to say that I'm thrilled that we were able to bring you in here and do this interview and that the book finally came out. And I just think it's absolutely wonderful to share this feeling with you.
Thank you, Vic. I'm thrilled to be here. This is great.
When you were back in town, back in the day, going to Antioch College, did you used to say to yourself, gee, I hope I get to be on the Book Nook someday?
Sadly, I did. Yes,
did
of course. I think I read here like a poem. Oh, we don't need to dig it up. But maybe for Women's Voices Out Loud. My parents insist I was on here for some other reason. They're very supportive. And
Susan Carpenter used to do programs here.
Yeah, I think I might have come with her.
Okay.
I don't know. But yes, it was a goal to be on your show.
Uh-huh. Good. Well, here you go. And
thank you.
Hopefully you'll put out another book in the next
I will.
20 years. And
I'm going to look, let's say five.
Okay, good. That's good.
That's realistic.
Well, I think it's all very exciting. And I got to say, I was pleasantly shocked by your story. I learned a lot about you, Rachel.
Oh, that's so very scary.
I don't know if it's something I wanted to know, but
probably not.
I'm just kidding. But there is violence, be warned, and there is bad language. Not a whole lot.
She likes to curse.
But there is some bad language.
She likes to curse.
There's some
and blaspheme a little, yeah.
How do they describe the kinds of scenes that when they give a warning? How do they put it?
I don't know. We talk about trigger warnings and stuff now, which their subject matter would be more what you would need a trigger warning for.
What is a trigger warning? I'm not familiar with it.
Trigger warning is there's a subject matter in this book that might be personally upsetting to you.
Okay.
So you'll hear them if there's sexual violence or something like that.
Okay, like you're reading it and you're going, how does she know about my family?
Yes.
Right.
And you get like, this could upset you kind of thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're dealing with very current issues, and yet I like the way you chose this locale where they really are disconnected. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of text messaging going on here. This is a very – it could have taken place at any time. In fact, I was reminded a little bit of In Cold Blood. There were no cell phones. There were no cell phone towers.
Right.
But you are into the motor vehicles.
Yes. I wasn't in real life. I did a lot of research about that. Briefly, I had a friend who had a Vanagon Westfalia, and again, like this sense of place a little bit becomes a fascination. So it became a main character. She refers to it as Veronica.
That's the VW van?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, people that are into those are really into them.
I'm terrified. I don't know if I got it all right. I did a lot of research.
I'll check with my expert.
There might
be. Rachel, it's really been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest has been Rachel Eve Moulton, and her novel is Tin Foil Butterfly. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening.